From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello to everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, Count Panic's not here. Count, are you here? No? Well, no, folks, this is a podcast exclusive episode. We weren't able to get the live episode going, so instead, Count Panic got the week off. I'm back to work, and alongside of me this week are two brand new faces to the Bob After Dark family. I'm very excited to have them. We're going to start with making them introduce themselves because I'm cynical and I want them to talk more. We'll start with Sarge. Hello, Sarge.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Doing good. Who are you?
Well, I am the DM that runs our iHunt game is supposed to be every other Sunday, but we've had an extended break. I am a DM of very many years. I've met Bob in my role as primary panel director for OhioCon. I'm kind of a renaissance man, too. I've got a wood workshop outside. I do a little writing. I've done some panels on how to DM and kill your players and make them love it. And just, I'm kind of all over the place, and it's an absolute joy to be invited onto this show. But we also have one other person today, too, who is one of our... it's one of our friends, Joshua Shockley.
Am I two people? I didn't realize this. But yes, so hi everybody, my name is Josh. I'm in Sarge's iHunt game as well. That's how I met Bob. Sarge is also in my Pulp Cthulhu game. We've been doing tabletop games together for years. I am currently working on my master's in English literature, mainly looking at early 20th century written properties and how they're reinterpreted in a post-structural framework in the 21st century, which means I get to read a lot of H.P. Lovecraft, Tolkien, and Robert E. Howard and play a lot of video games.
All right, okay, Josh, leave some credentials from the rest of us, all right?
I haven't graduated yet.
Fair enough.
But yeah. And
folks, as you find out from Josh as he starts talking, Josh knows as much lore as I do, if not more, in the world of the paranormal. Josh and I go back and forth quite a bit, and it is fantastic, and I'm very excited to have him on board.
Aw,
and I introduced them both, so I get to, you know, have that third seat where I get to make fun of them both. Yeah, there you go.
Well, Sarge, you have a very important role this week. So, folks, if you guys were expecting the standard episode formatting, we're going to be doing things a little different this week. So there's not going to be any spooky news of the week. I'm sorry. I know about the Gate of Hell opening up in the Gulf of Mexico. We'll talk about that this week on the live show upcoming. Instead, we're just going to dive right into the topic, and that is internet lore. And that is, we talk a little bit about it during Creepypasta Month, where people these days are creating lore and scary stories and spooky things that people are going to be talking about generations from now. The current horror writers and the people that are creating these creatures are just getting more and more fantastic. And I'm very excited about that as somebody who studies the paranormal. These are things that may not be real concrete, but the way people write them and create them, it develops a character all of its own. And this week we're going to be talking about the SCP Foundation and how that relates to our show. And I'm going to pass it over to Sarge to talk a little bit about what the SCP Foundation is and how it relates to the Bob After Dark world.
Well, so SCP Foundation is essentially a fictional canon that has been created online by a very wide commune of horror writers. But it has a really interesting twist on it in that everything that is presented as essentially subjects of this foundation are written up as almost governmental style reports. It makes it really interesting to read through different types of horror cliches from the aspect of someone who is attempting to write notes on how to contain such a thing. Try and keep as objective of a view as possible on what its capabilities are and threats are. But then directly after all of that, go into the description of how the object or being came to be in the curation of the foundation. Rolling back a little bit, SCP is an acronym that's short for Secure, Contain, Protect. And the way it's kind of pitched is like a cross between Men in Black, Warehouse 13, and Cthulhu lore. It is anything and everything that goes bump in the dark, and SCP goes out and actively tries to contain it, make sure that it cannot harm humanity as a whole, and make sure that it is either neutralized or secured in a way that it can't do further harm. It's really interesting to read through each of the individual reports, because as you click on any of the links, it is only SCP followed by a number. You don't really get a good view of what the thing they're trying to contain is at any given time as you read through the report, because the way it starts is there's a photo of what it is, and then it immediately goes into some type of containment protocol. This object needs 2 feet of titanium steel enclosed on all sides at all given times, or there must be 2 people with eyes on this object at any given point in time, and only one of them is allowed to blink at a time, as well as a myriad of other different types of containment protocols. So already you get thrown into this world as soon as you start reading the report of why does this thing need this style of containment? Then it goes into the properties of whatever the object or entity is and what it's capable of. And again, you start getting this sinking feeling in the bottom of your stomach as you start to read what this thing is capable of, or what warnings for what whoever is experimenting on the thing might run into as their experiments go through. But the true meat of any of the reports comes down to the description of what the actual thing is. And it generally goes into some sort of a very dry governmental report of how they came into contact with the object, how many losses were encountered trying to contain it, as well as any type of description that is of note. One of a good prime example is SCP-096, which, as you start reading it, it's excessive. Like, the containment protocols are ridiculous for this. But you find out later on in the report that this thing will literally go through any type of matter to kill you if you see its photo. So all containment protocol is around erasing its face from every known photo source, every known internet image, without actually have somebody seeing it, as well as the horrid description of what it does to people who it actively gets a hold of. Now, all of this put aside, it also has a healthy conspiracy theory style redaction protocol put in place. So you're not even getting the whole story from the report. As a horror genre, this is a really well-written stuff, and it's highly curated too. So what you're getting has gone through layers upon layers of peer review by the entire community or whoever is in charge of said community in order to even get to your eyes. So whatever you're seeing is of generally the highest quality available to you, and makes it a very interesting niche writing commune, I guess you would call it. Very interesting for any type of people looking into how horror is written, or even how legends and mythos have developed over time through kind of a spoken word. It's very good anthropological stuff.
And there are 4 containment classifications, as they call it. So each one of these anomalies has a classification of how, I guess you could say, how dangerous it is. Now, Sarge was telling me it first started off with the protocol of how it was supposed to be contained into developing into how dangerous this thing is. And the 4 categories, it goes safe, which is pretty much this thing's anomaly, but it's not going to hurt you. There's Euclid, which is it's a potential threat. If it gets out in the world, it can kill you or it can cause some serious damage. Object class Keter, which is if it gets out in the world, it could pose an end of the world scenario. And the last one is Thurial. I could be pronouncing that one wrong. That one is a cosmic level thing that typically helps the foundation in some regard. And I could be wrong on that one. Can you guys chime in about that?
It's basically a god level thing, like a creation extinction or
even an alternate reality that can override our own.
Yeah, so it's usually bad for humans. And I think there are also more classifications than just that. I think they've kind of branched out into specializations. But what's even fun is sometimes you're reading these things, and initially it'll be marked safe or something, and then you see it crossed out, and then it's Euclid or Keter, and then you read through the document to find out, oh God, how did this go terribly wrong?
Yes.
That's probably one of the most interesting parts about SCP reading for me, is that the tension and the anxiety of figuring out what these things is literally like reading through a group of reports on a crisis. Like you're trying to go through FEMA paperwork of what exactly happened. You have to cross-reference files, which thankfully are all linked. It's not like you have to go searching for them. But you'll find attached to it things like incident reports or initial audio of some sort of an interview that occurred. And you have to, in order to get the whole picture of what this thing actually is, you got to go through it and leaf through it. And again, that sense of anxiety and dread and horror is just builds with every page that you flip through. And it's enticing. Like it's a rush, honestly, getting through it and starting to see how all the pieces come together.
And the really cool thing is how dedicated the fan community of the SCP Foundation is. There are YouTubers out there that will create the audio recording between SCP and personnel, or personnel talking about said thing, which really immerses you in the world of how terrifying these things actually can and will be. So that's it's really immersive.
Please go ahead. There's also entire lore channels devoted to like delving deeper into this lore because it's been going on for so long, and there's thousands upon thousands of entries that whole like mythologies within this universe have developed, whole organizations, whole histories, and they're so spread out that sometimes you need somebody to put them all together to make sense of it. And it's, again, you have to go search these things out. And sometimes you're reading, and I won't get into it for mine, but sometimes you're reading something and something will click about how it connects to another SCP document without being very blatant about it. It's very subtle in its connection.
It's a deep rabbit hole once you get started.
Very much so. And it's really cool because the other like things that are immersive about it, there have been fan-created video games too. And the Containment Breach one is horrifying because you're pretty much playing SCP personnel trying to run away from everything.
Markiplier does a bunch of playthroughs of them, and they're hilarious.
They really are, especially as he goes through and tries to, because it you have to face a bunch of SCPs that have been released at the same time, and several of them stacking on each other is just bad news to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. So without further ado, folks, tonight we're each going to take the hard task of picking out one out of the thousands of SCPs. Each one of us picked out one of our favorites, or one that really stood out to us, that we're going to talk about. And each one of us is going to discuss what it is, and then the three of us will discuss a little bit about it, and we'll move on. It's, again, this was no easy task, because there are literally thousands. And for me, I could pick, when I was sitting down to think about which one I wanted to do, I had about 25 off the top of my head that are some of my favorite ones, including the one Sarge talked about earlier. But we each had the daunting task of picking one. I think Josh was the only one who was like, this is the one I'm doing.
Because I'm a freaking nerd about it, and you'll find out why.
And that's a good place to start. Why don't we pass it over to Josh to tell us a little bit about his SCP?
Okay, so my SCP is SCP-701. And as much as Sarge has really, really exalted how wonderful and new and amazing the SCP universe is, I'm here to destroy that and say this is nothing new. It's been going on since the 2030s and 40s. And I will destroy everything you love and hold dear. Anyway, so SCP-701, also commonly referred to as the Hanged King, it is a play. It is a play that nobody really knows who was written by. It's a Caroline era revenge tragedy that is actually has many things in common with Hamlet. So if you think of Hamlet, you're really on the right track. Supposedly written in 1640. Though later on we find out it may have been written by Christopher Marlowe, who was a contemporary of Shakespeare, which is revealed in another SCP. What's so special about this is most of the time when it's performed, nothing goes wrong. It's a play, it's performed, colleges, off-Broadway, whatever. But in about 36% of the time, it will cause psychotic and suicidal behavior in all the performers and observers. They will commit suicide, they will attack each other, and if they manage to escape the theater, they will essentially just commit violent acts for the next 24 hours. After which time, the mimetic properties, and you're going to hear the word mimetic or a lot, if we're talking about SCP, it's essentially something that worms its way into your brain by either looking at it, hearing it, seeing it, something that kind of influences your actions. Yes, so they're effective for 24 hours, after which time they, if any, survive. They are usually traumatized or comatose afterwards. So it's not very fun. And when this play starts going weird in the 36% of the time, essentially leading up to like the 1 to 2 weeks leading up to the play, performers will start almost as if they were reading off a different script and make changes, unaware that they're making changes. Then during the actual, either the opening night or whatever night will have the largest number of people in the audience, you'll begin to see what they refer to as SCP-7011, the entity. A hooded individual starts to appear, usually in the backdrop. No one will notice it, remark, but in Act 5, this hooded figure will start becoming incorporated in play. He will, at this time, the cast will either murder each other or commit suicide, and that's when the rioting and murder appears. Now, this is then carried over into another SCP called SCP-2264, which is like an alternate, an extra-dimensional city called Aldegada. Very, very dreamlike. There seems to be a masquerade and carnival going on all the time, to which the Hanged King presides over the city. Now, the reason I like this is, and as Sarge mentioned, it is a mixture of Cthulhu mythos. You can see how, if you're familiar with the Cthulhu mythos at all, or familiar with the author Robert Chambers, this is almost a direct lifting of The King in Yellow from the work of Robert Chambers, which has been incorporated into the H.P. Lovecraft Cthulhu mythos. Very similar. Robert Chambers was a late 19th century writer. He only wrote a couple science fiction / horror pieces. The rest of his stuff was very mundane. But in a couple of his short stories, there was a play called The King in Yellow, where the said King in Yellow was driving people to read this play and driving them to madness through this play. And there is a line, there's a reference to a city named Carcosa, which in a poem in that play, which bears a very striking resemblance to the city of Aldegada. So once again, this is being taken almost directly from the pulp writers in the 1930s. This is exactly what was happening in the pulp and fiction and science fiction scene in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, when you had essentially people would post stories, they would post an address, then people would write in to response about it, or write in another story in said universe, and which is how Robert E. Howard, H.P. Lovecraft, Clark Ashton Smith, those kind of people got to know each other. So essentially you had the exact same thing going on, just a lot slower, and which has now influenced the 21st century writers of horror and an online kind of message board, whereas before it was pen, paper, and pulp. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love SPC 701 so much.
I remember reading through this one separately a while ago, and one of the things that really caught me and made me interested in this specific SCP was the fact that this was the first instance of a memetic threat that I had ever read of. I know we talk about memes and how basically like these images and this humor that we all find relatively interesting or can relate to somehow connects with us all at the same time. And in SCP lore, memetic threats essentially like can override your sense based off of either seeing the object, seeing somebody that has it, hearing certain phrases. It's a very vague style threat, but in this particular case, it's going through the play itself, the actual handheld manuscript they managed to contain. And if you read through it, you have the possibility of undergoing these effects. So they took a recording, or somebody had a recording of this going wrong. And the memetic effects did not travel through the video, which was interesting because there are some SCPs where that is the case. But they go through a lot of links to make sure that they record exactly, at least in lore, what had occurred and what they have a piece of. It was a really interesting delve, honestly, to kind of see the containment of like, oh yeah, it's just a manuscript. Just don't read it. Wait, okay, why don't I want to read it? You know, like, yeah. is this?
Yeah, it's not even reading. It's even just performing it. It's like, it has to be performed. It has to be before an audience.
Yeah, so and they're like, specifically like, don't let this get out again. Like, it's safe to contain, just don't, you know, perform it.
As you read through
the rest of the story, it starts just getting worse and worse. And you're like, oh my God, these people are going nuts off of nothing of their own volition. Yeah. And it's intense. I really enjoyed reading it.
Josh, this is an object class Euclid, correct?
This is, let me bring it up again. Yeah, it's a Euclid, it's object class. And if you read into it, oftentimes there are like entities or different objects associated with the SCP itself. So like if you go on the SPC 701, I'm not sure where they got the image. They might have photoshopped it partially, but there is a still image of the Hanged King, quote unquote, the SCP 701 one, which appears on stage. So yeah, it is a play.
What I find fascinating about this SCP is it's a part of almost a media subgenre of the SCPs, because it's not necessarily a thing. It's not a concrete entity that's coming to get you. It's a piece of media in some regard. I know it's a play, but it's we'll call it media for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And I'm reading through it now, and these things are kept in a archive in a storage facility. And it is exact copies of the 1640 Quarto. It's 27 copies of the 1965 tradeback edition, 10 copies of the 1971 hardcover printing, and 21 floppy disks. And apparently one VHS tape of somebody performing it, and a steel knife of unknown origin, I guess, that had something to do with the Hanged King. It's fast.
Yeah,
go on.
Sorry.
No, go on.
No, it said, like, in order to allow the actors to kill themselves or kill other people, objects will spontaneously appear on stage to allow them to do that. And in the article, it says, like, in the course of the play's run, probably it's killed about 10,000 people.
That's insane. And it's fascinating. I don't know how you guys are familiar. There's two media ones that come to mind. There's the Ronald Reagan falling apart VHS tape. Yeah. That's that one. All it is it's a videotape of Ronald Reagan giving a speech, and his body is slowly coming apart, and there's a man standing behind him in a giant black hood, and that's all it is. That's it's just a videotape. It's a safe class SCP. And then there's the other one.
Weird.
And then there's the other one, which is just a radio signal transmitting through space. And all it is of an extraterrestrial kind of floating around the room in distress. Again, just a safe SCP. But it's fascinating when you have something that's more of an idea versus an actual concrete creature that's going to rip your eyeballs out of your head. It's always cool when you have like a thing that either you have to like watch and it might come out at you, or in this case, it's just something you have to perform. And there's something even more terrifying about that. You know, if you contained all the copies of these things that exist and you're, you know, hopefully you have all of the copies. And it's funny to me that they had 21 floppy disks.
Yeah. And, but it's interesting when you see like, so SCP 704, that's a relatively early one, but then we get to SCP 2264, which is the other dimension, the Aldegato city. And you see how much the universe has grown because you find out the Hanged King is an emissary for this city that is trying to, that there's an emissary for this city that is trying to propagate art about the Hanged King. That within this article, yes, it references the Hanged King, but it also references, anyone's familiar with SCP would know these, like the Black Lord, which is SCP-035, the Mask, Yaldabaoth, the Devites and the Sarkites, Marshall Carter and Dark. It references SCP-507, this poor man who keeps dimension hopping, who can't control it. So already you see this universe building because now it is self-referential. It can draw back upon this larger mythos it created.
And actually, if you go to the SCP Foundation website, they actually separate the SCPs out by series right on the sidebar. And currently they have seven series that have been kind of separated out by either year or like those who are kind of the keepers of the community have been like, all right, we're going to kind of like separate it out here. Now we're into a new wave or something along those lines. And you can kind of read them based off of that. So like you said, a lot of the earlier ones are very ingenuitive, honestly. They have a lot of very interesting quirks and twists to them. But as you start getting further and further into them, that imagination doesn't go away, but they start interwinding everything and just the scope of it sometimes. Like if you bounce into it, it can be a little overwhelming. But as you just keep reading and keep going through everything, it all starts to become a lot clearer as you start to piece the familiar parts together. It's amazing what they managed to do with this community.
Yeah, and I'm just going to go a little nerdy on this. And again, it's harking back, it's drawing direct inspiration from the Lovecraft mythos, but you see that within the Lovecraft mythos itself. A writer named Ambrose Bierce in the 19th century wrote about creatures, these characters known as this god known as Hasdor, this place known as Carcosa. Then Robert Chambers, the author of The King in Yellow, took Hasdor, to which Lovecraft then took that, incorporated into his own mythos. And then August Derleth combined Hasdor and The King in Yellow. And now even there is this whole little sub mythos called the Yellow Mythos based upon Robert Chambers. So you have now these branching mythos that are being reincorporated into these online mythos that just keep spreading it, essentially.
Yeah.
Almost mimetic.
And this is a perfect example of how lore, legends, mythos of any kind changes. If you go so far, I mean, you can throw it back pretty much to how Christianity started going across the entirety of the Middle East, going into Russia and Europe, where they, in order to try to convert people, they started incorporating other people's mythos into their own in order to make Christianity more attractive to them.
I would disagree with that. They may have incorporated certain cultural practices, but they didn't incorporate mythos. I would heavily disagree with that, but anyway, continue.
Makes sense. Anyway, so for legend telling, as far as like tribal lore goes, those things tend to develop from generation to generation as people add to the different legends and mythos and flesh them out, both more, make them more expansive as they go through. It's almost a very natural thing for groups of people to do, especially when given a consistent lore to grow off of.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. It's like the Greek pantheon and how that just went, essentially.
Like it just
went.
It just went. I mean, like you have the very like local deities that then get turned incorporated into larger state deities that then get taken by the Romans, who then incorporate them with Egyptian deities, because everybody who then take them as their own deities and then incorporate them into Egyptian deities, and then that just goes, and now you have Renaissance artists and the Neo-Raphaelites running about naked in a field somewhere. But yeah.
You know, I also find it fascinating about this SCP that it crosses over with other SCP entities. When you read through them, it's really cool how they have crossover between them, and I really like the fact that this one correlates to like three other ones. Some of my favorite SCP stories is when you have two that are contained together because of a reason. The crocodile, very famous SCP, the angry reptilian lizard thing that lives in the vein of acid.
The hard-to-kill reptile.
Yes, the hard-to-kill reptile was actually secured with the sentient Apple computer. And the Apple computer only remembers so much, but it remembers its time with that SCP, and it always wants to interact with that thing again. So it's always cool when one harps with another. And even in the case with the Plague Doctor, it hung out with the Play Mask SCP. And I can't remember these numbers off the top of my head, folks. I apologize. But it's really cool. It's where it's like, oh, I traveled with this mask at one point and I wore it. And it's like, wow, that's really cool that people can harbor back to SCPs from, you know, we're in the thousands now. The fact that some of these thousands can refer back to some of the early 100 ones or even in the pre-1000 ones. And the story continues. That's some of my most fascinating stuff about the SCP universe. And it's really cool that it ties into like five or six different ones throughout the entire mythos of the SCP Foundation. That's what I find fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, folks, why don't we take a quick little break? And when we come back, Sarge is going to talk a little bit about his. I'll go into mine. For our podcast fans, stick around. You're about to be hearing a podcast from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stick around.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
And we're back. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, thanks.
Good to be back.
Josh, what did you do during break?
Well, I have waged yet further war against the family of raccoons that have established an industrial age society within my attic. I have tried to introduce polio to them, but it has not worked. I will be trying malaria next.
You know, you could just take up arms and go up there with like a spear and hope for the best.
That would be bravado, which I have none.
That would Sarge. Take chutzpah.
Sarge, what did you do during break?
I tried to take up pin flicking, you know, how you twist the pin around through your fingers and stuff, and accidentally open up a portal to another dimension. I have a lot of angry people yelling at me, but I managed to get them out long enough so I could finish this up.
Oh, that's good. I actually got the high score in Excalibur pinball. World record.
Nice.
Damn it. Yeah, that's hey. I am now the world record holder in Excalibur pinball.
Nice. Is that a list of like you?
No, believe it or not, I don't even know if Excalibur's an actual pinball game.
I will bet you a dime to a dozen there's at least five
of them. I'm sure there's at least one Excalibur pinball game out there.
It's like rule, you know, 26 of the internet. If you talk about it, there's a pinball machine of it.
For it. Yeah.
I pull the curtain back, folks. Someday someone's going to realize I'm not being serious about these commercial breaks. All right, Sarge, would you like to share your SCP with the audience?
Heck yeah. So my SCP I selected is SCP-93. It is another one of the earlier ones, but it basically takes everything that I really love about SCP into one kind of cohesive format. SCP-93 starts off as describing essentially like a small red worry stone. Circular in nature, it describes the type of etchings that are in it, no known language. But when it's held by a living individual, it changes color. They're not sure why. There's no real explanation about it. They're still trying to investigate it, but nothing has been solidified in lore yet. But essentially, they think it has something to do with regrets carried by the holder. That's all they got on it. But whenever it's not being held by a person, it will essentially go around in a circle around the nearest mirror, and it will go to unmeasurable speeds to get to it and then suddenly stop on it. And whatever color it is, based off of whoever held it, will change the color of the mirror itself and will actually open a portal to a different dimension. And it goes through at least several 8, 9, 10 paragraphs of the description of this and how it works, or at least how they've observed it working. And before they even get to the point where it becomes a mirror, becomes a portal. There's original documentation on it from back when it was first put into the SCP Foundation's archives. And then it starts going into the tests themselves to the point where they start using D-class personnel, which is something you'll see a lot of if you're going through the reports. Essentially, D-class personnel are like prisoners who have agreed to go through SCP experimentation in exchange for reduced sentences or freedom. Unfortunately, a lot of times it doesn't turn out very well for them, depending on what they're being tested. In this particular case, what they'll do is they'll send a D-class person with a harness on and a winch, essentially, on the back of them into this portal. And they go through great detail describing the other side of this this portal as they go into it, once they do finally get into it. But that's all on the bottom of the page. The actual SCP-93 page itself only gives the notes on how it's supposed to be contained, what it can do, and essentially like, hey, by the way, this is what the kind of things we tried with it. If you want to read more about it, you're going to have to go through the blue test or the green test or the violet test, which is all on the bottom. And as you click through it, it'll actually bring up like full written out documentation on these expeditions into the mirror and what happens with each one. And it's, again, very distant, very kind of objective as you can be, description of what's going on in the video feed of these people. At one point, they go into what looks like an underground bunker with lots of doors, and there's old newspaper clippings typed up. They get a quick flash of what, you know, basically like an apocalyptic war has happened, and, you know, they have shelves upon shelves of rations and canned food that has all gone bad. And a vile-smelling fluid is covering some stuff, this black fluid. But before they can, you know, do anything with it, they just get a sample of it, and basically the person comes back. And then, you know, they finally find somebody else that holds it and it turns a green color. So now it goes into the green test where they basically come out into like a farmhouse, right? A farmhouse of surrounding fields and exploring a little bit of it. And that's when they first see that something is wrong. And there is a large, humanoid shape that is basically crawling around on its hands, but is missing everything from the waist down. But it is massive, like at least 3 stories tall, crawling around. It has no face, except for like one, I think, hole right in the middle. And it doesn't notice them. There's nothing that says it notices them. And they go inside and they notice weird things that it looks kind of like a modern house. But when they go inside, it has this like faith-based operating system. I think it's called like Faith OS or Prayer OS or something like that on this computer. And they're trying to get into it. It doesn't give them a whole lot of information. But, you know, there's crosses up everywhere and there are lots of religious symbology. And then they have to back out because, you know, oh, they heard something. They need to book it. Like, this is not a good place to be anymore. And I'm not gonna spoil the rest of it, honestly, because this is a really good read. But there's at least three different other expeditions that just go more and more in depth into what's going on in this parallel universe, essentially, as they try to piece it all together. And the only way you can get through it, like you can get the entire picture, is by going one at a time and leafing through it as though it was occurring, you know, as you're trying to piece together some post-operational report. You weren't there yourself, and all you have are these documents that you're trying to, you know, get some sort of cohesive image from. And it is so interesting and, oh man, mesmerizing is a good word for it, as you try and delve down this rabbit hole, only to figure out at the end that there's this, I don't want to say a big surprise, but there's a twist on it you didn't necessarily expect. Whoever wrote it, or the group of people that wrote it, did a fantastic job of pacing and making sure that everything was introduced in a tense and well thought out way. The documents flow really well together. And one of the best things that the SCP Foundation writers do is they have a cohesiveness to them. The reports generally sound the same. Like, there's no real... Like, you can start to pick out differences in writing styles as you go, but by and large, the continuity and consistency of the writing in the Foundation is very much on point. The authors will harshly critique each other to make sure everything is, you know, perfect for when they do send it out, because they want to make sure that everything that gets submitted is of the highest quality. And most people don't mind. Like, yeah, I know I submitted one at one point. It didn't get approved, but the feedback I got was harsh, but fair. Like, you got the impression that it wasn't, they weren't doing it from a place of hatred or to try to keep you out. They were just holding you to a much higher standard than most communities and writing communities would. And it was thrilling, honestly, to go up against, to go, you know, into something like that, or to try to get my piece submitted, to know that there were such very good gatekeepers, in charge of it all. Anyway, that's mine. SCP-93. Probably one of my favorite personally, and I would highly recommend anybody that's listening go out and take a listen to it.
Sarge, object class, what is it?
Object class is a Lucid.
Ah, very cool. Yep. You know, I always like the displacement SCPs, because it's not necessarily out to get you. You have to interact with it for it to do something to you. And it reminds me so much of, and this is one of the ones I actually know off the top of my head, SCP-201, the IV pole that will transport you to the Twilight Dimension. Very similar things. I don't know, are you guys familiar with 201?
No, I'm not actually.
So 201 is an antique, like, IV pole that if you go within 40 meters of it, it will just transport you to where you're at right now, but there's no sunlight and there's no living thing. And you just hang out there until you get to come back. And sometimes people, when they cut, you know, it could take upwards of a few hours to a few weeks. And it'll only feel like a few seconds in real time. And the entire time they're in this Twilight Dimension from 201, they feel like somebody is watching them. They get highly hysterical and they're very paranoid based on the things they have in front of them. And I love displacement ones. Because it's so fun. It's cool because, like I said, it's something you could keep in a closet with a sign on said "Do not disturb," and you might not want to, you know, don't go in there. So it's an easy to contain thing. But God, the dangers involved with it are horrifying.
Yeah, and again, that ties into, I mentioned it, the SCP-507, the dimension hopper, where he goes to that dimension and finds out a little bit more about why it's so horrifying there. But I'm glad you mentioned this one, Sarge, because I think this might have been, this is like one of the earliest SCPs I ever read.
It's definitely what got me involved in it, for sure.
Yeah, and I love, as you said, the pacing, how you are experiencing the horror through the D-class subject, but also through the report where you know what they don't know. And you're just sensing that dread of just little things, like it will go into a note underneath this saying, the image now shows a bunch of figures staring down through the hole at them. Subject does not seem to notice them. And yeah. It's like, oh God.
Yeah. When asked, they don't see anything. And you're sitting here like, oh God, get out, get out, get out.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Another one that's really similar to this one is SCP-1983, which is the farmhouse in Wyoming, who has one of the doors. It transports you essentially to a different dimension that is very hot. And once you're in there, you can't get back out. And there's a whole bunch of writing done with the addendums with them, as well as the there was a diary that was found in it by other SCP Foundation members. After the fact, that basically detail what one person did while they were stuck in here and why nobody else can no longer get in. And it is intense. Like, I don't want to spoil it because it really is such a good read to go through. But if you do like those more dimensional hopping or dimension horror, honestly, like SCP-1983 is definitely a good one to look into.
Sarge, did you have a favorite test out of the five that they have done up here?
Honestly, which one is that one? I know off the top of my head what it is. Give me one second just to kind of look at it. Violet. The Violet test is honestly my favorite. Because it's one of the longest. It's one of the longer pushes into the world that they've done, and the person finds themselves in the middle of a city. It's really interesting what they find in it, because it's not only do they explore more of the society that they're involved with, but they also it really harps on the fact that there's nothing there. Like, there's just nobody anymore. The evil Icker keeps making an appearance. The big humanoids you get to see a bit more of and understand why they are where they are. But also it delves a bit into like some personal stories too. Like I think one of the members comes across a safe that had been opened, and it's like a handwritten note and a gun that they don't know anything about. Like, they can't operate because it's just so different than anything that we have. And it's just the tension of the whole thing is you're just kind of like reading it and engaging with it at the same rate the person in the test is doing. It's really good. Like, that's my favorite personally.
And I especially enjoy how, yes, all these stories are vetted. All these stories are put through the ringer to make sure they match the quality. But in that sense, that's the only qualification. There is no very precise canon. So a lot of these, like, there's a lot of short stories written about various SCP things, which go into the characters, which go into exploring more about them, and sometimes they'll contradict each other. And it still works, because a lot of these SCPs deal with alternate realities, alternate timelines, alternate dimensions. Is this the dimension we're in? Is this the timeline? Are they both right? Are they both wrong? We don't know. And that's what also makes it kind of great. It's like trying to decide, especially once we start getting to the deeper mythology about other organizations that are part of the SCP world. Like, I'm thinking of like the Starkites and the Church of the Broken God and all that, and that entire history and mythology that's going on in the background.
There was one I just read about that was a splinter group off the Foundation. They basically saw the Foundation as unethical, so they took a bunch of the SCPs with them and booked it and started basically doing terrorist attacks on the Foundation to free the things inside of it. And one of the things that they had captured was essentially a razor, like an old style hand razor. To cut somebody's face. And at first, when the only known effect of this thing is when you shaved, oh God, what was it? Something happened. It was very, very minor. It was considered something that you looked over, like something that didn't affect you enough to really like put it off limits. And shaving gear. But essentially, as they, I'm sorry, it's the mirror itself. My apologies. And when they looked into it, it possesses a mild hallucinogenic effect on whoever it is. Whoever used it reported not being able to see the hair being removed, even though it was being cut in real life. So they basically just kind of tucked it away, but this organization kept attacking, specifically going after this thing. So, of course, more and more people piled onto it to research to see if there were any alternate effects, what they could try and find out about it. And at the end of it all, after like, I think, 2 or 3 years of research overall in lore, they found out that anybody who interacted with the mirror had a secondary effect that was gradual, where they started doubting themselves and everything around them. And at first, it was just like that little nag in the back of your head in the first like year. And in the second year, it became like double checking things like, oh, well, did I write this down or what? I didn't remember reading this, so let's check that. And they actually started using those who had been exposed to this as double checkers. Like the rate of accuracy in a lot of the reports went up because of these people. But it eventually got to the point where they could no longer make decisions. Period. The head person in charge of those experimentations died in the tub because they couldn't decide when to get out. Like, it's it, and like everybody's like, okay, we're locking it away now. Nobody gets to see it. Nobody interacts with it now that we know what this is. And they found out that those attacks were a false flag. They were meant to drive the foundation to research this and get as many eyes on it as possible so the most amount of people would be affected by the secondary doubt. And yeah, like I thought it, like I read that and it blew my mind, you know, just the stack upon stack of that lore. But also that interesting twist in just an SCP that, you know, wouldn't normally do something, but now all of a sudden it's like, oh, this weird secondary effect was weaponized in a way that you couldn't imagine. So that's another one of my favorites, but that's SCP-884, by the way, for anybody who's writing these down.
And for folks, by the way, if you're hearing booms in my background, no matter how soundproof I make my studio, fireworks will still get through. So if anybody's hearing booms and pops in my background, I promise you I'm okay. Just fireworks.
Why? It's what day is it? It's July 10th.
It's July 10th when we're recording this, but the folks are blowing off fireworks. So I apologize if anybody's hearing any booms and cracks.
Okay.
Sarge, I appreciate you sharing this one. I like the multi-layer SCP stuff, too, because sometimes it's very one-dimensional. Here's your creature, and that's the end of it. It's really interesting when you have multiple layers of something, and you could visit it, and it's got several things you could find out about it.
Yeah, those are the more active ones. The one with the gears, the big one. Hold on, SCP gears. I swear to God, I'm prepared for this.
Is that the one where it's like in a whole building?
A large clockwork device, weighing several tons and covering an area of 18 square meters that looks like it came out of a steampunk catalog. And on one side of it, it has an intake booth, like a whole booth that could fit a person. And on the other side is an output booth, about the same one. And in between them is a copper panel with a large knob and a small arrow that reads rough, coarse, one-to-one, fine, and very fine. And basically, you put something in the one side, and then you select a setting, and it will come out the other side based off of some sort of calculation that they can't figure out. But the whole thing is filled with experiments of the dumb stuff that these people do to this thing.
It's wonderful. Like,
some of them are chilling because at one point it actually deconstructs a D-class entirely. They put a D-class in there and they set it on coarse. And when on the output side, it was all of his organs and skin folded next to him in a neat pile.
Yeah, and it's very Manhattan Project, where these are regular people. It's not like nefarious people. These are regular, everyday Joes doing experiments. And it's just like a lot of the SCPs are like in sometimes in break room because they are able to give you more juice drinks or something. Or like there's an SCP that's literally half a cat, is the front end of a cat, and its middle part is just like this little dark patch, and it just wanders around the foundation building because it's weird, but hey, it's very lovable.
Yeah, the one I'm talking about is SCP-914, and one of my favorite lines in the entirety of SCP comes from this, the experiment log, that they have made an entire different site to track, by the way, because so many people love messing with it, where they put a super ball, like a super bouncy ball in, and they set it to the very fine setting. And they got back a super ball that accelerated to a redacted amount of speed and killed a redacted amount of people before launching itself out of the building and into space where they lost track of it.
Yeah,
it's just the redacted number there, though, just makes it like for me, because it's like, yeah, blank killed blank amount of people. How many is blank? How many people did this kill?
Jeez,
it's a similar one with like, I'm sorry,
another one.
No, there's a similar one with like a regular tomato plant, but if somebody tells a bad joke,
that's my second favorite one.
The tomato will hurl at them. And so they did an experiment where they did a D class reading, I think, like one of the worst jokes they could find. And then again, it's like tomato immediately left, like accelerated to redacted speed, passed through redacted number of walls, and impacted D class at redacted amount of force. Death, instant death upon impact.
So funny, because its speed reacts to how bad the joke is. So yes, they experimented with different like dad jokes, and like it just gradually got worse. It's like, oh yeah, it splattered him. He had a little bit of stuff in his eye, but otherwise he was okay. Another one said something, he had major contusions and bruising around his face. And all of a sudden, this one's like, yeah, there's a bunch of redacted here. And it all has to do with deaths, how quickly it was going, and how many walls it went through, specifically to kill this one person for telling a bad joke.
You know, it's funny, Sarge. I think that was one of the ones you were going to pick for this. I remember you put it up on your short list for the tomato.
Yeah, that was, like I said, it's my second favorite. And just because it's this, while the SCP Foundation records are largely dark because you're dealing with interdimensional forces that humanity can't comprehend 9 times out of 10. So it's going to be a dark place. But there's also SCPs that are just silly.
The Tickle Monster.
Yeah, the Tickle Monster, the coffee machine that will randomly spit out a random liquid. It could spit out sulfuric acid. It could spit out bad coffee, but it never does the same thing twice. At one point, they got an unidentifiable liquid.
Yes.
That could not be sensed with any like recording devices we have now. So they just kind of put it aside. And nobody knows what to do with it.
No, I remember that one. It spit out liquid gold, too. And blood.
Yeah.
Well,
I guess. Oh, go on, Josh.
Yeah. No. I don't want to. Like, I know you have.
It's okay. No. You're fine. We can go on
hours.
I want to say
this.
There's. Sometimes they also get a little poignant because I remember there's SCP-05 Cassandra, which is a combination of two other SCPs essentially to make a 2D figure who is alive and completely sentient. It is somebody drew a realistic looking girl named Cassandra. She lives on a piece of paper, 2D, and anything she needs, like clothing, food, or anything, they'll just draw it in for her and she'll eat it. And like she can cross over to other sheets of paper or other images as long as the two are flush. And whatever new thing she transfers into is there's a different artistic style. Still appear in that style, but she was fine for a while, and she was happy and enjoying herself. But then one day, they accidentally brought a hard copy of her containment procedures report and laid it next to her, and she got on that page and realized what she was, that she wasn't real, that she was just this creation, and she became like clinically depressed. And it was just essentially the rest of the paper is her, them trying to find out ways to gear her up. I mean, I think the last thing they tried is technical drawings for like a 1964 Ford Mustang. And basically she assembled it by hand and it's pending approval for her to drive it onto like a landscape or something. So it's in some sense, like, yeah, they're very, again, it's a very dry, very stark document, but in this, it is the existential crisis of this new being the society created.
Well, it doesn't help that one of the big comparisons of Cthulhu lore in a way to essentially help you to get a minuscule understanding of a fourth dimensional being and its concept of a three dimensional space is the ant on a sheet of paper or like the figure the dot, on a piece of paper. Yeah.
A little 2D,
And if you twist it in a Mobius strip to the dot, it's an endless plane. And to us, though, we see it, and it's just this little dot running around on a piece of paper that is extremely limited in space. So that takes on its own, you know, fourth wall, existential horror of being that ant on the page.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bob, what's yours?
All right, guys, I'm going to be right back. I'm going to check on Tiff and the cats because I heard commotion from the fireworks. Be right back. Note, this is 1 hour, 58 seconds. I have to edit out. One sec, guys.
I mean, honestly, not doing too badly. I thought we'd be about an hour at the end of mine.
Yeah. Yeah, and then with Bob, and then we'll kind of finish up. We'll be good.
Yeah. This was a lot of fun.
No, I'm enjoying this, yeah.
I gotta get back to recording. Hey guys, sorry about that.
Not a problem.
As fireworks scared the cats, and then Tiff was trying to round them up. Okay, Sarge, can we take it back to where you take it over to me?
Sure.
All right. And, so, Bob. Oh, yep, hold on. And go.
So, Bob, What's your favorite SCP now that we've gotten all of ours out of the way and talked like, you know, chatter monkeys for the last hour?
No, it's fine. I'm happy to have people to talk. Usually when it's me and Count Panic, it's me talking and teaching Count Panic. I'm the one being taught this week, I'd say. So you guys each talked about, one of you guys had an idea, the other one had like this interdimensional, you know, mirror thing. I was the only one that picked an actual concrete creature. So my SCP is SCP-106, and I'm also the only one that picked an object class Keter. No surprise there, me picking the apocalyptic style entity. So SCP-106 is also known as the Old Man. SCP-106 is a deformed and decrepit old man with skin peeling, no real hair, no real eyes and face. It's he has a mouth and he has eye holes, but 106 is probably, in my opinion, the most horrifying of all of the SCPs. So SCP-106 must be contained in a room that is layered in lead. Very much lead, steel, lead, steel. And not only is it multiple layers, it's 40 layers of identical material, separated by no less than 36 centimeters of empty space. Why they have to be very much protected on that is because not only can SCP-106 kind of teleport around where it wants to go, it also spews out sulfuric acid type material that can melt walls and melt its containment process. Now, the terrifying thing about the elderly humanoid 106 and its rotting flesh is it will stand in a dormant state sometimes for days, sometimes for weeks, sometimes for months. And the SCP-106 will wake up in a very agitated space. It'll dive into a pocket dimension and pop out some random place in the foundation. If it's not secured proper within those layers, it'll grab a personnel, throw them into the pocket dimension to never be seen again. And sometimes it'll spit them back out as a dilapidated corpse. And its particular target really likes to target some of the D-class personnel and some of the high-ranking female personnel. It's almost as if it knows. And the other scary thing about 106 is it doesn't hunt to eat. It hunts for pure pleasure. And it goes into this agitated state. But when it's dormant, the best way to describe and the best way to kind of the theory of why it goes in this dormant state is to let people believe that they can have a sense of insecurity. There is no actual way of destroying this thing. They've tried a lot, so now they just kind of throw it into a room with all of these layers in between. So when it teleports around, it might get stuck between the layers and give up. But if not, it's just kind of, it could get out and just get people. So they do their best to pretty much try to keep it. Some of the different ways that people have been, that have actually come out of the pocket dimension, have been found as mummified, has had all of their limbs twisted in a 100 degree angle. Some of their organs have been ripped out. Some of their spinal cords have been ripped out. Pretty much every orifice of their body has been now their openings and just different various things. It also likes to attack based on weaknesses in the human body. So when it pops out of its pocket dimension, it will go after somebody's Achilles tendon, or it'll go after someone's, like, it'll know someone that has tendonitis and it'll attack someone's knees, and it's never had interaction with them before. It's almost as if 106 likes to play with its captured prey, or it comes to try to pick it up. The occasional times that transmission devices have been still operational in the dimension, this pocket dimension that comes in and out, have heard people, like, hearing different things, and it's very very degraded and very terrifying. This thing doesn't speak. It just plays with its prey before it spits him back out, or it just keeps him in the pocket dimension forever. And that's the story of SCP-106. Or the dilapidated old man, object class Keter.
Hmm. One of the interesting parts of that one, and what makes it kind of horrifying as you're going through this report, is that there is a essentially there is a giving up at one point of containment. They're like, essentially it comes down to, at some point, this thing's getting out. There's nothing we can do about it. We can only try and make it a certain amount of time, and try and make it as safe as possible. But when it does happen, you get, they outline this procedure where essentially they get a person and they detail how to hobble that person. And then they have to, so like breaking a big bone, like the femur or the hip bone, so that they purposefully cry out, and then projecting that cry over the loudspeakers to attract it. And they suggest if one doesn't do it again on something else until it comes and gets them. And as soon as it captures them and it goes back into its dormant state, build the containment around where it is. Because otherwise we're not getting it back in, and somebody else is going to have to get eight. And it's such a, not a depressing, but it's such a pointed look on how the Foundation, yes, it is a human organization. These are real, regular people, well, real, quote unquote. These are regular people trying to study extraordinary things. But the essential giving up of, like, we can't do this in any other way. It sucks. We feel bad about it. But this thing is going to get out and kill more people if we don't do this. There's an SCP that's basically like a ritual that goes through the same thing. And it details a horrific ritual that has to be followed every, I think, like 6 months. And there's tons of it just blanked out, like, but your brain fills in everything about it. And essentially they're like, at the end of the document, they say, if this is not done, nuke it. Just get rid of the whole site. And we have to rebuild it again because it's still going to be there. But if we don't do this ritual, the world will end.
And there's a whole lot of stories that are written around that, because the ritual is based upon a pregnant woman, a pregnant young girl.
Before you continue with that, let's do a trigger warning on this. Cause
this one,
I'm not going to say anything about it. I'm just saying the way they insinuate that it's something so terrible, again, it lets your mind run rampant, but then there's so many different side stories written about it. Like in one side story, you find out it's just somebody reading her a bedtime story. But the whole point of it is you have to make people think it's horrible for the ritual to work. But it's really nothing bad. But then there's other stories where it's like, dear God, somebody put this on paper, find out who they are and get them some help.
You're referring to the Seventh Seal SCP, yes. Right? Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And that has its own mythology based around it as well. That's like, now it's developed a whole other thing. But as I said, that ties into, yes, letting your brain fill in the details like good horror writing should, but also with the non-canon where you can do that twist, where you can do that. It may not actually be bad. It may be terrible. Who knows? Because nobody does.
Yeah, no. 106, when I was thinking about what I wanted to pick, I was like, yeah, 106. And it reminds me kind of the Slenderman mythos in its own kind of way, where it pops in and out of this pocket dimension. The only thing is Slenderman doesn't, you know, hunt adults for pleasure and, you know, then kind of rips their knees out and stuff.
I mean, we don't know. It's Slenderman. Nobody really knows what Slenderman does. I mean, for all I know, he could be bringing him in for a tea party, but I've watched Marble Hornets, man.
We doubt it, but there's no proof otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but it's so this one in specific is just, I like it because, yes, it's a very straightforward report. There's not much else to it. There's not much extra documentation, but the horror of what it does and the descriptions of how it hunts, only to be capped at the bottom of, we don't have any other way to do this but with the people harming somebody else to protect everybody. it's there's nothing more SCP in my mind than that, honestly, because there's even a whole like reference to an ethics committee that oversees the SCP Foundation. And basically it's like, yes, we're doing all of these things, but is it right to do it? You know, is this something that we have to do in the long run? But they're almost the way that the lore around the ethics committee has developed is essentially like they have to make the hard decisions on everything. And there is no easy answer to a lot of these SCPs. It's, you don't have a choice if you want to prevent, you know, more people dying, explosions that can wipe out planets or even realities. Or I think there's one that's even like the, I think it's Cain, I think is the, yes, the one where he like wakes
Cain
up.
Cain and Abel lore.
The Cain, yeah, and Abel lore is ridiculous. But essentially this guy wakes up every like 6-7 months and he can't be stopped. Like you have to hit him as hard as possible with everything you have just to get him to go back to sleep. You can't actually hurt him. So they're like, how many people do we have to put in his way to get him to stay still long enough so that we can nuke him? And how many people are willing to sacrifice to do it? And it is like, there again, it's a dark, SCP Foundation is a dark horror-based writing community. And it definitely comes into view with some of the lore that comes out. But yeah, it's, again, this stuff's great. If you have any opportunity to delve into it, if you got like 3-4 spare hours and you're not doing anything and it's light outside, honestly, that's a prerequisite.
Yeah, it's look, I'm here. We're recording this at night and I'm looking through my notes at 106. I'm like, that's kind of terrifying. I want to point out too, one of the most terrifying parts about 106, by the way, is it controls time, space, and the weather in its pocket dimension.
Oh, it also controls emotion.
Yes.
Emotion and feeling in its own little pocket dimension. And they managed to get a small recording of it in the report. And what they report on the inside of it is basically like it plays with its food, essentially.
Yep. Yes,
it'll hunt it all through it. It will keep multiple people in it specifically to torture the others while they hunt it.
It's hell.
Yeah.
It's basically hell.
Yeah, it's a trip. Some of these are very much a trip.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, guys, we got enough time just to go over. If I was to sit down and force you guys to pick a second SCP, you don't have to go into it. Which one would you pick? I know Sarge would have picked the tomatoes. What about you, Josh?
I mean, again, I'm going to tie it back to the, I think I might have closed out of it. The SCP-2264. The city, the alternate dimension, because one, I just love how it ties back into the King in Yellow and the Carcosa mythology. I think the story itself that it ties out of it is very, very dark, very gothic, but also very like the supernatural horror. I'm a sucker for these things.
Now, see, I was actually thinking about going object, but I figured you guys were doing objects yourselves, or an idea in your case, Josh. So I was going to do an object myself. I was going to do SCP-498, the alarm clock nuclear bomb. Are you guys familiar with that one?
Yeah.
I've heard that one before.
So 498 is literally just an alarm clock that you have to hit snooze because there's no way of turning it off. But when the alarm kicks on, it'll get louder and louder and louder. And the idea is the louder it gets, the more sonic booms get produced from this alarm clock. And it just, the alarm will eventually get so loud that it'll rip the world apart and then proceed to rip the universe apart. So wow. They have to have a D-class personnel as soon as it goes off to hit the snooze button.
I think if I wouldn't pick the tomato, I would have to pick the thing that got me into SCP in the first place, which is, and I think that's true for a lot of people that read it, which is SCP-173, which is the living statue.
I think everybody would have picked that one.
Oh my God. Well, it got me into it because I have never been afraid of blinking before I read that. And I didn't realize. So essentially, it's a living statue that if you look away from it or you blink, it will move toward you at incredible speed, but only when you can't observe it. Essentially, its whole thing is you have to back out of the room while looking at it until the doors close, and you will immediately hear a thump as it tries to get at you. But it won't do anything else until somebody observes it. And it is one of it. I never realized before reading that how existential of a horror it is not to observe your surroundings, even for a split second. How at one point in time you are completely vulnerable to anything. And it happens once every like 3 seconds, 3-4 seconds.
Yeah.
And it is like it's not even the fact that this thing is it like kind of exists in fiction. It's the fact that they harped in on something that happens every 3 seconds and turned it into something horrifying. And that to me is what got me into SCP.
For you Doctor Who fans, by the way, that's exactly where they got the idea for the Weeping Angels. By the way, yeah. In case anybody was wondering. Like, yeah, don't blink. That was what do you think they got the idea from?
Yeah. If I can also give a second that's not connected to my original one, close third will be SCP-2513, also Carthage Must Be Destroyed. It's basically a bridge in Italy that basically if you cross it one direction you'll immediately have this intense hatred for Carthage and anything connected with it. And just as a history nerd, I love it.
All right, guys, that's about as much time as we have for this episode. So if people want to know more about you guys, I know Sarge, you're a streamer, you're a Redditor, you're a you're a panel director at conventions. Well, how do people find out about you? We'll start with you.
So you can find me at any place, generally under Sergeant at AMS, A-M-S, S-E-R-G-E-A-N-T-A-T-A-M-S. And I misspelled my username on Xbox, and apparently nobody else has misspelled their name as badly as I did. So I've made it pretty much everything. I try to stream on Twitch every so often. Most of our iHunt games are on there. You can also find me on YouTube at SergeantPepper88, no spaces, no dashes or nothing, where I have a lot of my old streaming stuff. I try and keep most of my tabletop games on there, just so I have something to reference at a later point. And that's pretty much it. If you guys have any panels that you want to submit to OhioCon, which happens in Ohio of all places, I will be opening up panels, panel submissions for in-person panels in August. So if you guys want to submit anything quirky or kooky, or it doesn't really have to be related to anime, as long as it's interesting. That's a good word I'll go with for this.
How did I get involved? Is that a subjective? Bob's gonna get booked at OhioCon this year again.
What's up?
I said, is that a subjective? Bob's gonna get booked for OhioCon again this year.
I mean, always. Like, you came what 2 years ago, and then we hit COVID, and it was like one of the best panels we had as far as population, butts, and seats went. Yeah, you're coming back.
Thank you. There we go. Booking it now, folks. First con of 2022. I'll be at OhioCon. And Josh, how do people find out more about you?
I'm afraid I'm rather boring in that I really don't put much out there. Anything I really post online is just for close circle friends. I have done some presented at some conferences. I presented at the Midwestern Modern Language Association conference in Chicago. 2 years ago, well, it had to be 2 years ago before COVID. But I mean, that's really it. I mean, if you're curious, in either at the end of fall or next spring, look up the ODU library for my thesis, which I will be defending. Either
his master's thesis going to drop on SoundCloud.
It's going to drop
in 2022, y'all. Fire.
You will just hear me in a very, very tired voice just reading out the whole thing.
Well, real quick then, since people will be curious, what's your thesis on? And if you could sum it up in 3 sentences.
my thesis is on how, again, how modern early 20th century properties, i.e. Written books, stories, are being reinterpreted in a 20th century framework by Hollywood and by games. So I'm looking at the authors Tolkien, H.P. Lovecraft, and Robert E. Howard of Conan the Barbarian fame, and looking at how they're being reinterpreted and what's good about that, what's bad, and all things in between.
Will you be covering the Leonardo DiCaprio Romeo and Juliet, which is arguably one of the best Shakespeare interpretations in history?
No, I'm not, because he is early modern and not in my time frame. So
got to keep that dissertation narrow.
Oh, God, yes. I'm also interested in 19th century occultism and horror literature in that period. So that kind of blends into my love as well.
Well, there you go, Bob. Now you have somebody to offload all your occult books to.
No, I have too many. Don't take my occult books. Thank you. Folks, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. As always, Mom and Dad, good night, and to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. And remember, folks, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are, not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.